It is a little after 7 a.m. Eastern on a Halloween morning. It is time for TR in the AM Halloween style. And yes, we are in the spirit on this Friday morning. I am in costume. I bet you can't guess, though, what I'm going as on this Friday. I'm going as the ghost of Chris Farley. Another Chris Farley mention here on TR in the AM. Chris Farley, as you may or may not know, the late, great comedian, the sketch artist, just genius in a lot of ways on Saturday Night Live. Back when you used to watch Saturday Night Live. Chris Farley, prior to that, was a rugby player at Marquette University in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So I got the Bucks hat. I got the rugby shirt. I even have some Matt Foley motivational speaker kind of looking glasses. Not going to put those on for you, but that's it. That's your attempt today at some Halloween fun. Not a big costume guy in my adult years. I know a lot of folks, they still love it. You know, it's a lot of the same people I think as adults love Disney still. But hey, good for you if you're into it. I know who loves Halloween on a Friday too, by the way. I talked to a few of these folks yesterday. Teachers love Halloween on a Friday. They don't like Halloween like on a Monday or a Tuesday because then you get these sugared up kids and they're trying to bring candy into school and everything else. You know, when you have Halloween on a Tuesday and then you got the rest of the week that you're dealing with it, or a Monday. But Friday, yeah, the anticipation is ramped up. They're going to be a little bit hyper with that. But you send them home today. They go trick or treat. They got a couple of days to get it out of their system before they come back on Monday. We got a few things to get into, and also Halloween related on the show today, this morning, your favorite Halloween song. Now, it doesn't have to be a song specifically about Halloween. I know the Monster Mash for a lot of folks, if you're of a particular age group, is at the top of that list. You got to be about my age, but we're going to go with Halloween vibes for a song. And Tex Tider chimed in already with us. You can do the same right here in the show chat with your thoughts. He goes Thriller. I had that one high on the list, Tex. Thriller by Michael Jackson. Tex Tider, this was sophomore year. MTV was on 24/7, he says, just to catch it again and memorize Vincent Price's monologues. Yeah, Vincent Price was really good in that video. And I have no doubt, again, for those of us of an advanced age, Thriller is going to be right there at the top of that list. I'm going to go even more dated with my pick. I don't know. Should I go with it right now? For me, it's still Werewolves of London, Warren Zevon. That's where I go. I also will go with Mind Playing Tricks on Me by the Ghetto Boys. This year, Halloween actually does fall on a weekend, as the late, great Bushwick Bill once told us in that one. So, love to hear from you on this Friday morning. Again, a college football weekend is upon us. We'll get into that. We'll do some trick-or-treat where SEC lines for the upcoming weekend are concerned. We've had a little bit of movement in some of those games. I think Texas and Vanderbilt has ticked a half point up here in the last 24 hours or so, probably based in large part, if not entirely, on the availability potential for Arch Manning coming out of concussion protocol. That sounded more positive, although Wednesday he was listed as questionable for the Longhorns, and also on yesterday's report, he remained in that questionable status. It looks like safety Michael Taff for the Longhorns is also questionable moving ahead. That's an early game too. I don't know how much that can really make a difference. Does it make a big difference in a situation like that if you're playing at 11 a.m. Central, 11 a.m. local time, as opposed to maybe say 6:45, 6:30 Central? Yeah, maybe not. You know what is pretty spooky right now is the latest events right there in Baton Rouge. There's bye weeks. And then at LSU, it's goodbye week. And the latest to take his exit, Scott Woodward, athletics director. Yesterday evening, that one started to unfold. Probably in retrospect, not all that surprising, because when the governor a day or so before that says that you're not going to make the next hire for the football job at LSU, it either is going to be a situation where you're approached about moving on, or if you're Scott Woodward, you're like, you know what? There's probably some other places I can do this job. Now, I understand LSU's near and dear to Scott Woodward's heart, as he said in his exit message. Grew up right there, came home to LSU from his previous stop at Texas A&M. And Scott also made sure to outline championships that LSU won on his watch. Won the 2019 football title. Now, he had just arrived from A&M in that situation. Won a couple of baseball titles with a baseball coaching hire that he was responsible for in Jay Johnson. Won a women's basketball national championship. He was able to bring in Kim Mulkey from Baylor, the Hall of Fame coach, and she got it done a couple of years ago in women's hoops. And it's kind of the legacy in some ways, I would say, for Scott Woodward. He'll come get your coach. You know, he did it at Texas A&M when he went and got Jimbo Fisher from Florida State. He did it at LSU when he went and got Brian Kelly from Notre Dame. Mulkey, he was able to pull out of Baylor, where she had been for so many years. And, you know, there's also going to be a legacy for Scott Woodward. And we'll see if he lands somewhere else. The guy swings for the fences, no doubt about that. And I think with Kelly, there was some hope that there was sort of this Nick Saban blueprint where you go up to the Midwest and you get a guy that's had some success and bring him down and see how the fit works. Well, the fit just didn't work. I mean, we know that now in retrospect. We kind of knew it after the initial press conference for Brian Kelly at LSU. So, again, even as a three-loss team in LSU heading into a bye week, prior to even November rolling around, by the way, a three-loss team, the Tigers are keeping themselves in the headlines. And I got a newsflash for Governor Landry. The price of the brick, as much as he may not like it, it's not going down. Not if you're looking to land the Lane Kiffin or sitting P4 coach capable of winning over that fan base on day one. And I get what he's saying about taxpayers and, but you know what the taxpayers of LSU really, really like? They like winning. They like winning in college football. So if you try to go Costco or Dollar General on them with this next hire, they're not necessarily going to, I think, be all in on that. If anything, for Lane Kiffin, the price tag is going up. So we're not, again, to use the sort of warehouse analogy, we're not rolling back prices on the most coveted names for the upcoming or the ongoing now, already ongoing cycle. Now, maybe if you're able to work down the wish list and you hit on a Mike Elko, like A&M did its last time around. A&M poached Elko from Duke, 6-year deal, but still $42 million for Elko. To get Mike Elko from Duke, it took $7 million per year. And that includes a $22 million buyout for Elko now at A&M. Now, that's not pennies on the dollar, but relative to 10 years for $100 million, like you ponied up for Brian Kelly, it is kind of pennies on the dollar. And where A&M made the biggest mistake going back, and this is some shrapnel that Woodward catches that he shouldn't, you know, the initial deal for Jimbo was a big one. Where A&M really made its big mistake with Jimbo Fisher was the extension. And that wasn't handed out by Scott Woodward. That was Ross Bjork, previously of Ole Miss, then to Texas A&M, now at Ohio State. Yeah, we talk about dominoes in the coaching ranks. Look at the athletic directors these days in big-time college sports. Bjork handed out that extension to Jimbo. Now, Bjork flies under the radar a little bit, or sort of balances the scale, so to speak, because ultimately he will be credited with hiring Mike Elko, who right now looks like a tremendous hire for Texas A&M. But again, it was the extension for A&M with Fisher that was the bigger mistake rather than just hiring him. Now, getting back to working down that list, if you're LSU, maybe you get a guy in the Elko sort of framework that is more along the lines of Joe Brady in that sort of scenario where, you know, it's a guy that has previous experience at LSU, so he kind of gets it. He understands the culture and what he'd be going into there. Elko had been at A&M, so he very much understood what he was going into there. But if you're shooting your shot at Lane, he's making $9 million this year. So you're going to have to get into the low eights in terms of figures, right? And then you think about Florida being in this thing too. Florida fans have to be loving this, don't they? I mean, the narrative, at least partially right now, is going to be, why would anyone want to work for LSU when you've got the governor making statements and the board of advisors or whatever it is out there? Well, you'll go work at LSU for the same reason why Mike Elko left Duke for Texas A&M, because you can still win big in Baton Rouge, regardless of what the governor has said about conflicts of interest where ADs and head coaches are concerned. He's not wrong about that, by the way. Landry is not wrong about that. Now, I think he got a little bit off the tracks because, at least in terms of guys like Fisher and Brian Kelly, who Woodward has hired in the past, they aren't represented by the same guy. They aren't both Jimmy Sexton guys. But you can still absolutely win big at LSU. And it'll be interesting to see where we go from here with Woodward and everybody else involved. We got some comments we're going to jump into right here in the show chat. Rick Morrison checking in this morning. Good morning from China Grove. Whoa, ho, China Grove. And he offers up a Roll Tide. Rick also asking about a return date for Alabama outside linebacker Quay Rusall. We had a update from Kalen DeBoer on that here in the last 24 hours or so, I think, Rick. And Kalen sounded optimistic about getting Quay Rusall back in the not too distant future. He wasn't specific, though, on when Quay might be jumping back into that defense for the Alabama Crimson Tide. Of course, Alabama on the bye week this week. It would be massive to get him back within the next couple of weeks to go along with Yanze Pierre, because Pierre has really flourished at one of those spots. And they've played more 3-4 this year with two outside linebackers on the field together, not as much last year. So if they can get Rusall back to go along with Yanze Pierre, that would be a big, big, big boost to Kane Womack's defense. Clemens, M, anytime we tie the out, I don't know. It's early, and I struggle with reading from time to time, but I think he's talking about the outrage, maybe as it relates to coach's salary, something like that. But I'll tell you, I saw that initially as an outage. Did you see that last night, late night? I'm watching SVP on SportsCenter after the Thursday night football. And how the heck, by the way, how the heck do the Miami Dolphins just absolutely roll the Atlanta Falcons just a few days ago on the road? And then put forth that kind of performance on a Thursday night against the Baltimore Ravens. I know Lamar Jackson was back, but man, it's rough. Rough from the Miami Dolphins. If you thought they were turning a corner there, that was not the case against the Ravens on Thursday night football. But in terms of outages, YouTube TV, if you're a subscriber, which I am, ESPN went dark last night. And when I say ESPN, that means all the ESPNs. ESPNU, ESPN2, ESPN, SEC Network, dark. that guide on the YouTube TV last night around 10:30 Central got really lightened up with those channels going off. Here's Clemens. I think he's got it a little more clear here. Anytime I hear head coach salary talk, I think back to the outrage in Saban's deal in 2007. It's only a lot of money, right? Or it's only way too much money, or it's obscene money if the guy doesn't work out. Because what was Saban's initial deal? Was it like $4 million a year at Alabama back in 2007? All the money's gone up, though, as you know, Clemens. I mean, with the SEC network coming into play and the playoff coming into play, the money in general has just gone through the roof. I do wonder, again, if there is a bubble out there. You keep thinking there is, because the schools and the conferences are making it at maximum levels in every revenue stream. Television, maxing it out. And even right now, the SEC, with the new deal that it recently did with ESPN, looks like a good deal based on the ratings for ESPN, especially relative to the Big Ten with Fox and some of those outlets. You do wonder, though, with ticket prices going up, which we heard about that in the situation, probably not, probably a little tone deaf for LSU. I'm sure this had been implemented and they were going to roll this out regardless of LSU's record in terms of future season ticket sales, but going up in season ticket sales prices with LSU mired with those three losses before you hit Halloween, that didn't strike that fan base all that well either. Hey, let's talk about some trick-or-treat lines for SEC football in week 10. Maybe some lines that feel like a bit of a trick, maybe some lines that feel like a bit of a treat. We'll also take into account some totals where these games are concerned. And we will start with Vanderbilt at Texas. As we talked about a little bit earlier, Texas has inched up to now a 3-point favorite. It was 2.5 on Wednesday. It has gone to 3. The Longhorns hoping to have Arch Manning available. I'm on record. I like Vanderbilt straight up in this game. So if you're going to give me an extra half point and push it to a full field goal, then I think that's a bit of a treat for me to go Diego Pavia and the Commodores on the road, who already have road wins in Blacksburg and Columbia, South Carolina this season. What about Georgia at Florida? This is nostalgia game for me. This was first college football game I recall. Well, maybe two. Pops, big Gator fan, growing up in Northeast Florida like I did. I think I went to 1974 Kentucky and Florida in Gainesville. I think that was the first college football game I ever attended. Right there behind it, I believe, was 75 Georgia, Florida, down at the old Gator Bowl, which is where the current stadium sits on the St. John's River down there in downtown Duval. But yeah, Pops at the time, I think it worked out because, you know, I was every other weekend with Pops. So he didn't really have a choice in some of these, I don't think, as a single father. It was his weekend, and he was taking the kids to the college football games. So, yeah, about that time frame, I distinctly recall 7 years old or so, Florida, Georgia, Georgia, Florida. We get out of Pops's land yacht at the time. He had one of those Buick LeSabres that was this electric crimson color. Yeah, metallic crimson. Sweet ride. Had the black leather interior with the bench seating. You know, you get the whole family back in 75 in the front row of those Buick LeSabres. And I'm talking about a family of six. That's how massive these vehicles were. Got out of the LeSabre down there and just like an uppercut aroma of bourbon hits me. I still remember it. I didn't know what I was smelling at the time. But yeah, that's all you have to do down there for Florida, Georgia is get out of the vehicle. And by proxy, you might not want to take a breathalyzer. What else do we have here in the comments? Roger Woods chiming in. He says, good morning from Tallahassee, Florida. He's a big Bama fan. Clemens also says, Vandy in the points every time this year. I guess Alabama was the lone exception. And that Jam Miller touchdown maybe late didn't do any favors for some folks. Smoke Pork Chop chiming in. Nothing like quality time with Pops at the cocktail party as a youngin. Yeah, that was father-son bonding at its best. No doubt about it. But yeah, getting back to these lines for the SEC this weekend, Georgia now a 7-point favorite over the Gators. That was 7.5 a couple of days ago. I think that line opened at 9.5. So it's down to 7. A lot of folks, betting on, literally, that the Gators show some life after the departure of Billy Napier, had the bye week to sort of work through that. Billy Gonzalez is in as the interim. Changes to that offensive staff have Gator fans as excited or more excited than anything. You know who's going to be on the sideline helping with that play call operation, by the way, tomorrow in Jacksonville? Bubba Spurrier. Steve Spurrier Jr. going to be down there. Got to be an advisor, doesn't he? My concern for Florida is that initial surge will be there, but will they be able to sustain it, especially if Georgia, you know, is able to get into a 7-0, 10-0 type of situation? Florida still got a lot of guys out. And which DJ Lagway are we going to get? You know, we going to get LSU Lagway? And not crazy about that scenario if you like Florida and the points. But it is a ringing touchdown of 7 points. I'm going to look at the total probably more there with the Gators and the Dogs. It's 50.5. See, I would probably go under that. I'd probably go under the 50.5. I think it could be similar to Texas, Florida in Gainesville, you know, or Mississippi State, Florida. I think, you know, Florida is going to account of itself quite well. But I'd probably be more inclined to look again at that total than I would the spread one way or another in that one. What about Arkansas in that 4 o'clock Eastern game on SEC Network? Maybe you see it, maybe you don't, you know, depending on if you're YouTube, whatever you are. Arkansas laying 4.5 with a Mississippi State team that you just wonder at some point. A couple of things. How do they not already have an SEC win this season? Because they head to Northwest Arkansas without one. Well, if you saw the Tennessee finish for Mississippi State, if you saw the Florida finish, if you saw Texas last week, just some catastrophic end of game situations for the Bulldogs. They've been plenty good enough. I mean, A&M pretty much controlled them, you know, out in College Station earlier in the season. But Arkansas, kind of the same boat with Bobby Petrino in that interim role. And Talen Green, we talk about it with DJ Lagway, which version of that quarterback you're going to get. I'll say this. I think Arkansas's offensive line play has actually been better than I thought it would be this season. I think Florida's has been worse. So I don't know if Lagway's benefited from what we thought was going to be a big, big strength for the Gators. Now, Lagway missing pretty much all of the offseason has obviously been problematic for him. That hasn't been the situation for Talen Green. And he's also had a couple of years in that system with Bobby Petrino. That's another one that the total might be more the way to look. That total, 66.5 for MSU in Arkansas. I'm going to go under the 66.5. I don't like that spread. I'll go under again there. Couple of unders now. Let's get to some comments here. JM chiming in. Hey, man, you played some college football, right? I played very little, JM. No, I did not. Clemens is asking, where do we think the Bama LSU line will settle, or will it? I thought I saw an early line for Bama LSU, didn't I? Didn't I see something around double digits, Alabama, early? Yeah, there's Rick. He's coming in with 12.5. Ooh. I mean, that's still a roster for LSU, man. That's a lot of points. And I think kind of like maybe even more so. The one thing about Napier at Florida was you always sensed that his guys really did like him and really did want to play for him. Like, Napier had his deficiencies, no doubt about it. Primarily as a head coach trying to also be the play caller and coordinator for the offense. And then you got into special teams, which were a debacle at times under Billy Napier. But you never sensed or questioned, even when things were at their worst a season ago when they had so many injuries, especially at quarterback with Graham Mertz out, then Lagway out. They were down to like a freshman walk-on from Tampa, went out to Texas, just got clubbed. But even in games like that, you didn't sense that his guys didn't want or wouldn't play for him. They did. With Kelly, I don't know as much. I could see where there's actually some energy that is drawn to that situation with Kelly moving on. So it's a lot of points, 12 and a half. Yeah, Rick. Rick says he wishes LSU would have waited to fire Kelly after Alabama played him. Yeah, that's one way of looking at it, I guess. So some other lines that we're going to move into on a Friday morning here on TR in the AM. South Carolina at Ole Miss, speaking of 12 and a half. The Rebels, that looks good, right? Because it's been a South Carolina team that has struggled. But you've seen a couple of different South Carolinas just in the last 2 weeks. South Carolina at home against OU was pretty miserable. Lost that game by 19 on their home field, but then responded with a heartbreaking loss to Alabama, a 7-point loss in which South Carolina led that game by 8 with just over 2 minutes to go before the Crimson Tide scored 15 unanswered to steal one from the Gamecocks. Ole Miss, the better football team. I don't think there's any doubt about that. More complete. I think South Carolina's front seven, and especially their front with Brian Thomas Jr. and Dylan Stewart, can get after Ole Miss. I think the difference, though, for Ole Miss offensively as compared to Alabama with Ty Simpson is that Trinidad Chambliss can hurt you with his legs. If you're aggressive against him in the pass rush, he can really make you pay for it. I'm going to go Ole Miss as a treat here at minus 12 and a half. The thing I worry about with Ole Miss is huge win at Oklahoma last week, but man, back-to-backs at Georgia and in Norman. Ole Miss is roster-wise better than it's been in my lifetime probably, but still, as you get into November and these type of games start to accumulate, it gets tougher and tougher. What about Oklahoma at number 14, Tennessee, Saturday night? Tennessee, a 2.5-point favorite. I'm going to look at Tennessee minus 2.5 as a treat. I don't know if Tennessee's going to have the type of success it wants to have running the football against that Oklahoma front seven, but I do think they can hit for some big plays with those three guys on the outside in the passing game. So give me the Vols as a treat at minus 2.5. So we wind it down here and we get into Kentucky at Auburn. Cutter Bowley, man, he went off against the Vols. That's a bit of a concern for Tennessee on the back end in that game against Oklahoma. I just don't know, other than Satania, if OU has enough guys that can make Tennessee pay on the back end of that Tennessee defense. But with Kentucky and Cutter Bowley, has the guy finally done enough to convince Mark Stoops that, hey, you may not need to go to the transfer portal every year at quarterback? Because he had a career game in a loss against the Tennessee Vols last week. Now, the Vols did have a defensive score in that game, but Bowley was very, very impressive. If you're an Alabama fan, Kendrick Law has been a good player for the Kentucky Wildcats. So Auburn as a 10.5-point favorite coming off that road win, that 11-point deficit that the Auburn Tigers wiped out there in Fayetteville to get their first SEC win of the season. Is it going to be Ashton Daniels this week? Is it going to be Jackson Arnold? It's hard to envision a scenario where after the second half at Arkansas last week that it isn't Ashton Daniels. This is another game. I think the defenses against the run are going to be really, really good. Jeremiah Cobb, what can he get done for Auburn? Kentucky has at times run the ball successfully. Kentucky against the run has had some success. Can Auburn make Kentucky pay through the air on the defensive side? They haven't been built that way all season. Cam Coleman, it sounds like good news for him. He is probable. He's listed along with Malcolm Simmons, another wide receiver, on that injury report for Thursday for the Auburn Tigers. But it sounds like, based on comments from Hugh Freeze here in the last day or so, that Cam Coleman will be available. Connor Liu, the starting center, as we know, been out now. This will be a couple of games. They'll be without him. This has rock fight potential, doesn't it? I mean, this has like 2017 SEC basketball potential. You know, SEC men's basketball 10 years ago was like, what, 52-50? Some of those games. The total is 45.5. Really tempted to go under that. But as it is, I'm going to take the 10.5 points. Might be a trick. I'm going to take the road underdogs in Kentucky getting the 10.5. Not picking them to win, but if you're going to give me that hook to go along with those 10, I'll take it. Bama Bob chiming in this morning. Good morning, Bob. He asked, sorry if I missed it, but are you planning this show every weekday? Won't be every weekday for now. Maybe at some point down the road. Appreciate the question, Bob. Clemens, speaking of the portal, I'm surprised we haven't heard of any multi-year NIL deals to keep top guys at programs. And that's part of this thing with these interim teams, right? Clemens, this weekend, kind of goes both ways. I've talked to some Florida fans here in the last few days. Their concern is, you know, their roster is essentially going to be in, yeah, well, what's next mode. But the other side of that is you're still playing for money, not only in your existing situation, but if you are thinking you're going to be somewhere else, you need to play well to maximize your value with someone else if you're going to jump in 2026. And for some of the older guys, you're still playing for the NFL. And if you're a Florida player and you put really, really good tape out there against the Georgia Bulldogs, that's obviously going to benefit you a great deal. So there you go. There's some trick or treats where the SEC for Week 10 are concerned. Again, bye weeks for Alabama, Texas A&M, LSU, among those teams that are going to be off this weekend. Alabama looking to get healthy for that finishing run against LSU, OU, both those games in Tuscaloosa. Then you go on the road for the Iron Bowl at Auburn. We talked about Quay Rousseau trying to get back from his injury earlier in the season. Areas where, you know, the Crimson Tide is emphasizing improvement. You know, the thing is, 10 weeks into the season, you kind of are who you are from a personnel perspective. So I'm not sure how you go about getting major improvement from some areas where you've been significantly deficient. And I talked about this with Alabama's run game. I mean, it's tough for Alabama fans to look at that yards per game average right now. You know, this Alabama team kind of feels a little bit like, if you're an old head, you're an old head Alabama fan, this Alabama team feels a little bit like 1989 Alabama, right? When Alabama got through that schedule before going on the road to Auburn. Remember, the series went from Birmingham to on campus in 89, and Alabama had to make that trip to Jordan-Hare, and Homer Smith was coordinating that thing with Gary Hollinsworth at quarterback. You had a undersized tight end and Lamon Russell. Maybe you get some Josh Cuevas this year, you get some Lamon Russell vibes at times. But I'm not going to say smoke and mirrors, but an exceptionally coordinated and creative offense helped that 89 offense overcome some shortcomings, you know. And eventually, though, there was a bill to pay for that 89 team. And Alabama's already paid one against FSU. You just wonder here down the stretch if they can kind of continue to mask some of their issues in a way in which they get to the end of the regular season in a position to move on to Atlanta in the Southeastern Conference Championship game. That's probably why I trust Texas A&M a little bit more right now, because it's more of a line of scrimmage team. And they've got a playmaker at quarterback in Marcel Reed. Now Reed can go both ways. He can turn it over some too. But that team, you know, if it needs a stop, if it needs to make an offense one-dimensional, I think A&M has that ability. And also when the yards get tougher, you know, and you've got to legitimately go get tough yards, A&M looks like that kind of team right now. So as we get out of here, what about those Halloween songs on a Halloween morning? What do you got? Now, again, Tex Tider, he had Thriller, Monster Mash. That goes back to the childhood for sure. Again, though, for me, it's Warren Zevon. And that's what I think that's what we're going to send us out with here. Let's see if we got some Warren Z queued up here. Do we? I think so. You got it. Smoke Port Job, got it. You might be cool, but you'll never be as cool as that guy right there.
Walking through the streets of Soho in the rain.
I like it. Clemens is psycho killer.
Place called Lee Ho Forks. Gonna get a big
dish. Oh, God, he knows the deal, right? Shout out to Party Girl Avondale for your treat. This is how it works. By the today, you're in Northeast Florida. Now, I'm probably going to get a YouTube strike for this video, but I don't really care. Let Warren Zevon rock on a Halloween. Hey, have a safe Halloween, everybody. Have a safe fall weekend.
Better not let him in.
And we'll join you again next week right here on PRNN-EM. We'll have all of our coverage next week.
Werewolves of London again.
I like that one too. Werewolves of London. PCR. That works, Shane. But again, if you haven't subscribed to the channel, that subscribe button right now. Hit us with a like. Turn on those notifications to get all the content right here at FireRock. Happy Halloween, everybody. Until next time. Well,